for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Right now, rules governing hydraulic fracturing vary from state to state. The Obama administration wants to make them more uniform and has just released the first major federal regulations addressing fracking. Here to discuss what these rules mean for the industry and the environment, Coral Davenport of the New York Times, Amy Maul of the Natural Resources Defense Council, joining us by phone from Denver, Colorado, Kathleen Scamma of the Western Energy Alliance. And throughout the hour, I'll look forward to hearing from you. Join us by phone at 800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And welcome to all of you.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, Diane.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Coral Davenport, would you outline for us briefly these new regulations? What do they cover and how significant are they?
Diane, these are significant because this is the first ever major federal regulation set by the federal government on fracking. That's a really big deal. That said, these regulations only cover fracking done on public lands. The vast majority of fracking takes place on state or private lands. So it really only covers about 10% of overall fracking wells. They are significant. They bring forward new safety standards. They require companies to disclose the chemicals that they're using in fracking. That's a really big deal, something that people were very concerned about. They require they'll have government inspections of the well integrity, the cement lining the wells, to make sure that they're not leaking. And they'll set new safety standards for the storage of the used fracking chemicals around the wells, what's known as sort of the chemical pits that had been open.
And just for the sake of transparency, I do want to say I do own property in the Marcellus Shale, private property, which is not being fracked. Amy Maul, how does the NRDC feel about these new regulations?
Well, first of all, issuing new regulations for fracking on public lands was exactly the right thing for the administration to do. The state rules are patchwork. They vary quite widely. And as Secretary Jewell said on your show, the old rules were very old. And the BLM found that fracking can lead to water contamination, and also that the pits used to store the fracking waste can be a threat to clean air, clean water, and wildlife. So having a rule was important because we need that federal standard in place wherever fracking takes place on public lands. However, the rule that was issued was just too weak. In some cases, there are some provisions that are stronger than some state rules on the books, but in other cases, the provisions are actually weaker than what some states already have and which industry already comply with. When it comes to chemical disclosure or the pits or the well integrity, we think that the administration should have gone much, much farther to truly protect communities, the environment, and public lands from the risks of fracking.
And to you, Kathleen Scamma, I gather that Western Energy Alliance has already filed a lawsuit. Talk about why.
Yes, we have filed a lawsuit. Obviously, we in the industry have just as much of an interest in making sure operations are done safely, that they're protective of the environment. We work very hard to continually improve our environmental profile. But what we've seen is a rule that has not been justified. The BLM could not identify a single incident that necessitated this rule, and the states have been regulating fracking for decades, and they've been doing it very well. In fact, there is no regulatory gap. States that have public lands development already have in place very strict rules, and in fact, like I said, the BLM couldn't even point to one example. So we do not feel that this regulation was justified. It's not necessary. The states have an exemplary safety record, and it's just a more redundant regulation.
Coral Devonport, fracking has been going on for so long. Why did it take the administration this amount of time to come up with new regs?
Well, Diane, you're right that fracking as a process for oil and gas development has indeed been going on for decades. The thing that changed is within the last 5 to 7 years, there have been big breakthroughs in fracking technology, and that led only within, you know, sort of the post 2008-2009 period to this boom that we've seen in fracking development, unconventional fracking happening in places where it had never happened before. And that was why the administration stepped in during the first Obama administration. These rules have been on the works for about four years. Right when that boom started to take off, the administration stepped in and said, wait, there's so much more of this going on. This is an unconventional new technique. We've got to start looking at regulating this in the way that traditional oil and gas development has been regulated for decades. So the unconventional fracking and the boom and the new locations is what's new.
So up to now, it's been state by state by state.
Correct. There has never been, up until now, a broad, uniform federal regulation.
So how do the regulations issued by the White House differ from or strengthen state regulation?
Well, as Amy said, the states have kind of been grappling at this, on the ground level as fracking has boomed. Some states have put in place regulations. Some states have no regulations. It's a real patchwork with states kind of dealing with this on the ground as it comes up. The idea of this is to set one federal standard. Again, though, the issue, this is just on public land. It's not going to affect the vast majority of fracking that's going to happen. And the hope for this is really to set a uniform standard that will be a de facto example, a model, as states move forward and try to figure out how they're going to regulate fracking at the state level. For the most part, the states will still be dealing with this. The hope is by the administration is that this will give an example or set a model, but they haven't mandated that the states follow through and use these standards on the state and private land.
So, Amy, how well have the states done in regulating fracking?
The states have a long way to go. The good news is that in recent years, because of all the expansion and concerns in communities near the fracking operations that Coral mentioned, states have been updating their rules. But usually they're just catching up after problems occur, after people complain, after water is contaminated, after waste has leaked or there have been spills. Then states will see them maybe putting a new rule into place. And some have done that better than others. So, for example, State A might have a strong pit rule and a weak well casing rule, and State B might have a strong well casing rule and a weak pit rule. There's no one state that's really got the strongest rules that the public has been asking for.
Kathleen, what do you think? Why should the rulemaking be left up to the states?
Well, because they have an exemplary safety record doing so. It's not a matter of the states grappling with this. It's not a matter of the states not having regulations. That's absolutely not true. States have regulations for fracking, for wellbore integrity, for disclosure. The states are leading the federal government. The federal government is not leading this. In fact, the states are the model. And the reason it's best done at the state level is because there are differences from state to state. There are different geology, different types of reservoirs, different topography. There are different considerations, and that's why the regulation is best done at the state level.
Amy, yeah, she says, Kathleen says that the states have an exemplary record. Do you agree with that?
No, I can't agree with that, because many of the state rules are too weak, as I mentioned, and then it comes down to actual enforcement of the rules. And when you look at enforcement across the country, these rules are just not being enforced strongly
enough. Give me an example.
Well, for example, in Pennsylvania, there was a report that came out last year with hundreds of cases where groundwater has been contaminated. And one example is that if a company agrees to do something, for example, provide drinking water sources to a home where the drinking water was contaminated, they don't actually get a violation notice and they're not penalized in every case. And so there are no real incentives for companies to comply if there isn't strict enforcement, if there aren't enough staff to actually inspect every well, which is a concern at the federal level as well as at the state level, and if the penalties aren't really strong enough to force companies to actually do things right. Too often, it's business as usual for them to contaminate something and then maybe pay to have it fixed or cleaned up afterwards, if it can be.
Amy Mall, she's a policy analyst at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Short break here, and when we come back, Kathleen can comment on that. Contaminated water in Pennsylvania, and you can as well. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. From Vicky and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems, in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working together to build a culture of health for all. On the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about the administration's just-issued regulations on fracking. Here in the studio, Coral Davenport of the New York Times, Amy Mall of the Natural Resources Defense Council, joining us by phone from Denver, Colorado, Kathleen Scamma. She's Vice President of Government and Public Affairs at the Western Energy Alliance. Kathleen, I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to Amy's concerns about and allegations that water in Pennsylvania has been contaminated.
Well, I don't cover Pennsylvania. I'm not sure what Amy was referring to. It's important to note that there has not been a single case of underground sources of water being contaminated by fracking in the history of fracking. That's over 66 years. So what's important is to make sure that the well is constructed in such a way that there's no path of, so that nothing in the well bore, whether it's fracking fluid or the oil and gas that we're producing, can come in contact with underground aquifers. So that's the main piece that leads to safety with fracking. And that's why states have wellbore integrity rules. They have rules to make sure that, nothing can get out of that wellbore and into those underground aquifers. Then, in addition to that, we comply with federal and state regulations such as the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, and many other federal regulations that are implemented at the state level to ensure that operations are conducted safely and protective of the environment.
Coral, I gather the EPA is about to come out with its own report regarding water contamination from fracking.
Yes. As Kathleen said, there hasn't ever been a report of water contamination, chemical contamination as a result of the chemicals in fracking. The reason that there's so much concern now is, as I said, there's been all these new technologies that are used, fracking happening in new locations, this big boom of unconventional fracking. And so there hasn't been an episode yet, but there's much more concern that there could be kind of in this new Wild West of expanded fracking boom. And that's why there's new science. And this is what this new EPA report is about, is, you know, using new science, looking into these new technologies, fracking in new areas. And this is, you know, there's so much that's new and unknown about the new expanding frontiers of fracking. So the concern is, to regulate the fracking before there ever would be an incident of chemical contamination.
And yet, Amy, you believe that in Pennsylvania there have been situations where water contamination exists. The question is, has it come because of fracking?
Yes, water contamination has clearly been caused by oil and gas operations, not only in Pennsylvania, but in Wyoming and Texas and Alabama and Colorado and other states.
But if both Coral and Kathleen say there has not been a proven case, what does that mean to you?
Well, it goes back to the issue of why we need stronger rules. When you have strong regulations and you have strong enforcement, companies have to show that they are complying with the rules. And so regulators have data and they have information and they have records on each well and what exactly happened during the fracking operation. If regulators don't have that information, it's more difficult for scientists to determine exactly what happened during the fracking operation and exactly how the water contamination occurred. But in several of these locations, scientists have expressed deep concern that there is a link between fracking and the water contamination.
All right. Kathleen, I have a message from Twitter. If the states are doing such a great job of regulating fracking, why do we still not know what chemicals are being used?
Well, that's actually not true. Most states are requiring disclosure of fracking fluids, and even where states don't require it, companies are voluntarily disclosing their fracking chemicals. So that's been going on for quite some time now, and so that's just not true. We do know what's being used in the fracking fluids.
Coral.
One of the things that the new federal regulations will do, as Kathleen said, some states have disclosure requirements for fracking chemicals, some don't. It's a mixed bag. The new regulations require all fracking done on public lands. The companies have to disclose their chemicals 30 days after they've done the fracking. So that's one of the things that these new regulations will do, is require all disclosure.
Well, there's a catch to that, which is that the BLM has said that the oil and gas...
We should specify the Bureau of Land Management. We haven't gone to that. Go ahead.
Thank you. And that's the agency that issued the rules last week. And in the new rule, it allows the oil and gas companies to keep some of those chemicals secret. And the companies get to determine which chemicals they keep a secret. And there's no way to ensure that a doctor could get that information in case of an emergency. So while we strongly support chemical disclosure, and we're pleased that the BLM did issue a rule that would apply every state, it's just not strong enough. Some state rules are stronger than what the BLM has proposed for chemical disclosure.
So right now you've got differing rules all over the country. If the White House regulations go into effect, will every company be mandated to disclose all chemicals used on public lands only?
Public lands only, yes. So the companies will be required to disclose their chemicals on a website called Frack Focus. This has also been a source of controversy because that website has already existed. It's actually run by the industry, and it's existed as sort of a voluntary place for the industry to go and disclose their chemicals. So there has been environmentalists have said, well, this is not really the tool that we think is ideal for disclosing the chemicals. But the administration has said, well, this tool is out there. We're going to require use of this website. This is where you go to disclose your chemicals 30 days after you fracked a well.
Kathleen, tell us about Frack Focus.
So Frack Focus is not run by the industry. It is run by the Groundwater Protection Council, which is a body of state regulators who regulate water quality in their states, and the IOGCC, the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission, which is a body of state regulators who regulate oil and gas. So they came together and developed Frack Focus. Industry did provide funding. Why shouldn't we provide funding? We're, you know, wanted to help solve this problem, so we're helping to fund that, but it is run by state regulators. And I would take issue on behalf of state regulators for some of the characterization of state regulations. There isn't a regulatory gap. States are regulating fracking quite well. And it's not something that they're grappling with or that they're behind and the federal government needs to be a model. They are the model for the federal government. And so we believe that fracking and oil and gas is best regulated at the state level because they do have that experience and that expertise. And in fact, we talked earlier about the need for inspection and such. There have been many reports, including from environmental groups, that show the BLM doesn't inspect as much as states do. So actually, states are doing a better job of not only regulating, but of inspecting as well.
Amy, talk about Frack Focus.
Well, Frack Focus is a database. It's a website. Anybody can go to the website and look up wells near their homes. And in that sense, the concept is a very good one. We've had a lot of concerns that we've provided to federal agencies as well as to the managers of the website, how the data needs to be improved, how there needs to be more checks for accuracy, and how it needs to be easier for the public to access and just to search the information. And for that reason, we have always said that the agencies should not be using Frack Focus as the repository, whether it's state or federal, because it's just not good enough for what federal data should be. Frack Focus has announced that they're going to be making some improvements based on our recommendations, and so we're going to be looking to see how they implement those recommendations.
Carl, what do you think about Frack Focus, its construction, and how well it's worked?
Well, again, it's until now it's been a place companies can voluntarily do their disclosure. The Obama administration, when they announced the rules last week, said they are aware of the concerns of the environmental community about Frack Focus, and they said now that the federal government will be using it, they will become a board member, they will take a stake in the Frack Focus process, and it will sort of have some kind of federal government oversight. And they were saying this is, they hope to make it, you know, not less to stop the concerns about, you know, being funded and run by industry.
Is there any indication of how the EPA is going to rule on fracking? Do we have any insight?
Well, the EPA is actually working on a different set of fracking regulations as well. There's also concerns about fracking leading to more greenhouse gases that could contribute to global warming. So that's a whole separate set of issues. In terms of the science, you know, the purpose of that is that it's supposed to be straight science. It's not supposed to be political. It's not supposed to be guided by the interests of either industry or environmentalists. This is a new field. The science is really new. My guess is that whatever the new EPA report says is going to be the first step in a series of evolving reports. The science of what we're going to find out about fracking chemicals, how fracking is developed, is going to evolve over the years.
Kathleen, do you want to comment?
EPA is working on a study. We're anxiously awaiting those results. They were supposed to be out earlier, but I think it will show again that it's not. It will be another data point, but there's lots of information about fracking. It's not new. It's not unknown. We have been fracking for over six decades. If anything, the technology is improving. It's getting better. It's getting more environmentally safe. So it's not a matter of this being new and uncharted territory. We make improvements so that we continue to reduce the environmental footprint, and we continue to develop more oil and gas in America than we did before. So we've got a huge boom in the United States because of fracking and because of these advanced technologies.
Ain't me.
Well, we are really looking forward to the EPA study, and we had encouraged EPA to really do a comprehensive study so that the public would have a thorough understanding of all the potential ways that fracking could impact drinking water. We're a little concerned because we've heard that that study might have a narrower focus, and so
what does that mean?
A narrower focus? Well, if you don't look for ask certain questions, then you won't have answers to them. So we really want answers to all the questions. One of the things is that EPA was going to get data and be from industry and be able to go onto industry sites to gather more data during actual frack jobs. And now we're concerned that might not have happened and that there might not actually be that real world data. And so that EPA will really be looking at a narrower set of questions, so won't be able to answer all the questions. That's our concern. So we'll be watching closely to see what the study actually covered.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850, first to Fort Worth, Texas. Hi there, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for the show, and thanks for taking the time.
Sure.
I spent 7 years in the oil and gas industry as governmental affairs director and regulatory director. I'm also a sitting city councilman here in the Barnett. We've just recently revised our local ordinances. And I just want to echo pretty much everything that's been said regarding frack focus and the focus on groundwater protection. State regulators here in Texas do a great job, and certainly the disclosure of those chemicals on frack focus is a great starting point. And for the opportunity to improve that website, improve that disclosure, that'll continue. Lastly, you know, there is also a push here in Texas, debate going on between state entities and the local entities about local control and how much regulatory control a state, a city municipality can impose on the oil and gas development versus where is the state primacy.
The caller's right, Diane. It's not just in Texas. We're seeing, as fracking continues to boom and develop, we're seeing these local battles erupt around the country as some towns and cities grapple with the idea of banning fracking because they're so concerned about it. And this is, you know, one of the arguments the administration has made as they move forward with federal regulations is because there is such a patchwork because there's so much uncertainty. The argument is if you have uniform regulations, then you don't have, communities and states kind of grappling and these fights about banning fracking. The idea is to get some kind of uniformity.
All right. To Alberto in Denton, Texas. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Look, you know, I have been listening to you guys very closely, and I know that the technology has been tested for many, many years, you know, 60 years or so, as has been stated. I know that the technology is there. I know the engineering is there, but I think enforcement is lacking off. For example, in Denton, you know, the citizens, you know, decided that it was unacceptable to have a well in your backyard, inside of the city, next to the schools, next to your grocery store, next to your water supplies and treatment plants and so on. So I think the word is out there that the industry itself voluntarily disclosing and surveilling their processes is not working. And it will not work historically, has been proved. So I guess several questions, you know, that will come to mind, but I will not go through all of them.
All right.
The question for the people talking with you today is when the mineral right owners have a supremacy over the surface owners of the land?
Sure. I think that's an important question.
It is, and that's referred to as a split estate situation when someone who owns property and a home in the surface of the land does not own the minerals, the oil and gas rights beneath the land. And that's part of the battle that is going on around the country, because in those cases, the oil and gas owner does have the right to come onto somebody's property without their permission.
And we'll stop right there. You can finish that thought. When we come back, stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And from CA Technologies, who believes that in the application economy, every business is in the software business. CA makes software to empower enterprises and help them thrive. More information is at ca.com. From Carbonite, providing secure and automatic backup and recovery for businesses and homes. Since 2005, Carbonite has recovered nearly 40 billion files for its customers, from accounting databases to family photos. Learn more at carbonite.com.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Misty Copeland began ballet at the late age of 13 and rose to stardom. Today, she's the only African-American soloist with the nation's most elite classical ballet company. Why, she says it's time to shake up the white world of ballet. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. Just before the break, we had a caller asking about a property owner's rights when an oil or gas company wants to drill beneath the surface and go laterally across that property. Amy, I gather this has happened.
Yes, it has. And unfortunately, every state has different rules, but you have individuals who've had well pads put on their property, roads put on their property, even toxic waste spread on their property. They don't own the mineral rights, and they may not get any financial benefit from it. And this is one reason why we are seeing all these local movements, because communities don't have confidence that the state or the federal rules are protecting them enough. And that's why we need federal rules. Kathleen mentioned that the industry has to comply with, among other things, the Safe Drinking Water Act, but fracking is virtually exempt unless a specific chemical is used, which generally now it's not, completely exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. And these are the things that communities care about.
Kathleen.
So royalty owners are generally small, just individuals, about $21 billion is returned to royalty owners every year by the industry. So royalty owners own property just like that surface owner owns property. And in the case of split estate, which is where one person owns the surface and another person owns the minerals, in most cases, there's an agreement as to when the oil and gas company can come onto that property. There's compensation for disturbance on the property. So in most cases, that gets handled in an amenable way, and that royalty owner can access their property of those minerals beneath the ground, and the surface owner is compensated and has a say in where those facilities are put.
Let me ask you, what happens if a property owner owns not only the property itself, but owns the mineral rights as well, and does not give permission for that company to go across his or her land?
So if someone owns the minerals and they don't want them to be developed, then they won't be developed. But in general, you have lots of millionaires being made in North Dakota, for example, because most of those minerals up in North Dakota are owned by the farmer.
But, Amy, haven't there been some states that have allowed companies to access that property even when the owner owns both the land and the minerals and says no?
Yes, there are states, and I think it's most states, although I don't have the exact numbers with me, that allow what you're talking about, which is called forced pooling or compulsory integration and some other legal terms. And that's when, even if you do own the oil and gas rights beneath your property, if a majority of your neighbors have decided to lease, you can be forced to sell your oil and gas rights, even if you didn't want to.
Now, tell me about New York State. Coral, what's happened there?
So the debate about fracking in New York State reached such a pitch that eventually earlier this year, they have simply banned it. There was, interest in fracking in upper New York State. There was so much local pushback, and now it's been banned, which is really interesting to see.
All right, and here's a tweet from Joe. Why does the proposed rule require chemical disclosure 30 days after fracking rather than before?
This was quite a point of contention in the regulation, and the Interior Department said that their view is that you will actually get better information if you wait until after the well has been fracked. They'll say, if a company is planning to frack a well and discloses the chemicals that it's planning to use, what might happen is they might go in to frack that well, conclude that they actually need to use a different mix. And so the administration says, look, this way you're getting the actual exact mix of chemicals that were used. And they're giving the companies 30 days until after they finish fracking the well to say we used exactly this mix, exactly this much. But environmentalists have not been very happy about this.
All right, let's take a call from Cleveland, Ohio. Ted, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? So I just a couple quick things. One is, if we talk strictly about fracking the well pad, I think, a lot of things can be said. But if we expand that conversation to look at the injection of waste, which we are very familiar with here in Ohio, the disposal drilling drill cuttings, which we are also very familiar with in Ohio, and then if we expand it to look at Wisconsin and the silica sand mine and going on there, I think the conversation and the certainty with which industry answers questions gets a little bit more murky. And so I guess I'd like your folks to comment on those couple of issues. And also I would say that with regard to Frac Focus, I've, with some of my interns, I work in a nonprofit looking at this issue. We've compiled data on over 3,000 wells using Frac Focus. And I think the results are mixed. It's just a kind of
disparate assembly of PDFs, which really don't really help you answer questions. But, and I think industry knows that. Hopefully they'll do something about that. But for now, track focus is kind of, you really got to know what you're looking for. So
all right. Thanks for your call. And Kathleen, what about those injections of water?
So once the fracking fluid is returned to the surface, it needs to be managed and handled. We are working on increasing the amount of reuse of water, including produced water. So the frack fluids come up as well as produced water, which is generally water that's been stored underground for millions of years, is produced along with that oil and gas. And we have to manage and handle that in compliance with the Clean Water Act. And so there's a mixture of things that can be done. The majority of the water is reinjected downhole. It's used to help pressurize reservoirs to return more oil and gas to the surface, or it is injected in underground injection wells, which are meant for long-term storage of that wastewater.
All right. To Scott in Jackson, Michigan, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. The two words that I'd like to introduce into this discussion that have always been missing are artesian water. Artesian water is fresh water that occurs at a much greater depth than the groundwater or surface water, and it very often naturally flows upward to the surface. Many groundwater aquifers are fed by artesian wells. So if you if the fracking process pollutes an artesian aquifer, I think that that is a path of contamination for the fracking fluid into the groundwater, that that some of these fracking wells have been contaminating the artesian aquifers, which then flow upward into the groundwater aquifers. And that's why, and it does that in a very unpredictable way. And so I think that's how a lot of this alleged contamination has occurred.
All right. Amy?
Well, I think both Scott and Ted made a similar point, which is that there are many, many, many different ways that fracking poses risks to water, air, the environment, and local communities. Some of it is that underground injection and the well casing and well integrity, it needs to be as strong as possible. But we have to worry about what else is in the area, whether it is artesian water or a river, where the waste is going to go, how it's going to be managed, where the trucks are going to go. It's a very complex industrial operation, and all these things need to be taken into account in a very comprehensive regulatory approach.
Kathleen?
I would agree. It is a complex process, and it is regulated to reduce risks, to ensure that there's no way for that wellbore to come in contact with any underground aquifer. That's why we put in place many layers of cement and steel to keep that what's in the wellbore away from the aquifers. So it is managed to ensure those risks are reduced and managed properly.
All right. And here's an email from Bruce, who says, can your guess supporting these state regulations, individual state-by-state regulations, give some detailed examples of the differences between states. Kathleen?
Well, each state has different geology. It has different types of reservoirs, different fields. And so the state is better able to manage the differences, put in place regulations that make sense for the actual types of reservoirs, the types of oil and gas that are being produced, and what works in that state. So it's best done at that level as opposed to a one-size-fits-all federal approach. And it's been successful. You know, the states have an exemplary safety record, and, you know, they're just as concerned about the environment as is the federal government. I think it's a false premise to assume that the federal government does a better job than the states.
Ain't me.
I think the issue of chemical disclosure is a really good example. So, for example, we argued for the BLM to require disclosure of the chemicals before fracking as well as after fracking. And some states do that, and some states don't. As I mentioned, the BLM will let companies determine what to keep a secret in terms of which chemicals they disclose. But some states require companies to actually justify if something is a trade secret, and they give the public an opportunity to challenge that. Some states provide ways for doctors and first responders to get that information very easily. Some don't, and the BLM doesn't. So the chemical disclosure is one example of how states really vary quite a bit. Pits are another example where, in the BLM rule, they banned these open-air pits for fracking wastewater, which can be quite toxic, but only for temporary storage. They didn't ban it for permanent disposal. So we argue for the banning of all pits. And some states, for example, New Mexico and Colorado, have revised their pit rules in recent years to make them a bit stronger, but other states haven't.
All right, let's go to Byron, Illinois, and to Katie. You're on the air.
Hi, I was just wondering, Kathleen keeps saying that fracking is 60 years old, but Amy's kind of implying that it's newer. What's the difference between the fracking that, you know, 6 decades ago versus the fracking now?
So the big revolution that happened in fracking inside the last 10 years was the combination of traditional fracking, which involves injecting water and chemicals down a hole to fracture the rocks around, combined with horizontal drilling, which opens up so much more of the surrounding area. That combination of those two existing technologies is really what revolutionized the sort of fracking that had been going on for over 50 years and created this big new fracking boom, opened up all these areas where oil and gas had been trapped but inaccessible before.
Kathleen.
Horizontal drilling with advanced fracking has enabled the industry to produce vast amounts of oil and natural gas. That's why your gasoline prices are low right now. That's why we're saving consumers about $110 billion a year in natural gas and home heating costs. It's really exciting that we're producing that energy here in America. And what's great about horizontal drilling is instead of, say, having to drill 8 wells from the surface, we can drill 1 well and then cut down, you know, a mile or two below the earth, then cut over a mile or two underground, so it reduces surface impact enormously.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Baltimore, Maryland. Donald, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a retired U.S. Geological Survey scientist, and I've dedicated my profession to the interrelationship between the movement of the host rock and fractures and flow of water. And I just wanted to point out that areas that the EPA and others have not studied, and that is the role of what they call the proppants, the sand that goes in with the water and chemicals in the fracking. The sand goes in there in order to ensure that the fractures stay open when the water, whose high pressure fractures the rock, is depressurized so that the host rock remains permeable and lets the gas, methane, come into the horizontal lines. And I just want to say that most of the scientific reports has to do with seismologists that use what is called the wave equation, rather than the diffusion equation, which slowly propagates the fracture upwards when it is permanently. In other words, the openings and the host rock remain widened at depth, and this is a boundary condition for the upward propagation of fractures or porosity or what have you. And this has been ignored and should not be ignored.
Are you concerned about the effect of fracking on small earthquakes?
Both earthquakes and also the propagation is inevitably going to go upwards through the geologic formations, whether it hits, as you say, a pre-existing plane of weakness, which we call a fault, and will lubricate, you might say, by pulling the two sides of the fault apart so that there's not the same amount of friction on the two sides, but also even without that plane of pre-existing weakness, it will propagate upwards into the artesian aquifers, the land surface, and so these new lines of openings will allow the gas to propagate.
All right, we'll have to leave it at that. Is EPA going to look at that at all, Coral?
We'll have to wait and see what is in EPA's scientific study. You know, that will be coming out shortly, and I think that will be a really interesting next step in the fracking debate.
I should say. Well, lots to think about, lots to talk about. Thank you all. Coral Davenport of the New York Times, Amy Moll of the Natural Resources Defense Council, and Kathleen Scama, Vice President of the Western Energy Alliance. And thanks all for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Natalie Urblifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington, D.C. This is NPR.